and welcome to Table Talk. This is the podcast where we connect current culture with Christianity, and we do that through interviewing amazing guests, talking through anything that's happening in the world at this moment. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Jack. Hi, Jack.
Hi, Graham.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. I'm excited to be back. Autumn's here, finally.
It is.
So I was actually paddleboarding and swimming this weekend.
Wow.
And apparently it's going to be 1 degree this coming weekend, so autumn has arrived.
Okay, are you still going to be paddleboarding in 1 degree?
I probably won't.
Okay.
I'm
actually quite enjoying getting some layers on, if I'm honest. As a Scotsman, okay. I'm quite enjoying the cooler temperatures. I don't deal well with the heat, so I'm quite liking the change of season.
Okay, each their own. So lots of reaction to our last episode with
there
Rhoda.
Has been.
If you haven't listened to that, stop this episode now. Go back and listen to that, because we're going to try and connect the two, and I think it'd be really helpful for our listeners.
It's also just a brilliant episode.
It's not every episode you get on the Pink Power Ranger
exactly.
Talking about manifesting. So I've had quite a lot of reaction to that episode. Can
Good.
I share some?
Please do.
Okay, so just gentle pushbacks from friends, like, oh, Jack, what's wrong with just a bit of positive thinking? I think you guys just took that too far. There's nothing harmful in positive thinking. I was like, okay, yeah.
Okay.
This is another pushback. I just kind of think of God and the universe as kind of one thing, and merge those two together and put stuff out there. It's kind of like praying.
Mm-hmm.
So that's their version of manifesting. So they kind of merge those.
Okay.
And then the final one was like, hey, look, manifesting works for me. Don't know what Rhoda was doing wrong, but it is working. So it was really interesting, and they were quite firm on that.
Yeah.
But I just love that people wanted to feed that back. We welcome that from our listeners.
Yeah.
And we really want this to be a dialogue. We don't just want us to be putting stuff out there and not listening to the reaction. So thank you.
100%. And I think for me, that really gets to the crux of what I feel we're trying to do here, which is just explore things, discuss them, and understand the different perspectives on things. And I mean, we're both Christians. And so, well, what's that perspective? But we also want to hear from people what their perspective is.
Totally.
So that's really interesting to get that feedback, hear their thoughts on it.
Great. So on with our episode this week, mm-hmm. we're going to be thinking about how we focus our minds on what matters. So quite close to our last episode. And we've got a special guest here in the studio waiting really patiently, Linda Alcock. Linda was born up north in Sheffield.
Okay.
Gradually moved down south.
That's correct.
Now south of the river.
Oh, wow.
I feel like I'm properly south now that I've been south of the river.
Great.
You guys are south of the river as well.
I'm a Clapham guy, so I'm south of the river.
North of the river.
Yeah.
You'll get there.
Anyway, Linda's an author, speaker, and thought quite a lot about the subject that we're going to be thinking about on this episode, which is focusing our minds on what matters. But first, we just wanted to hear your reaction to the episode, because I know you've listened to it with Rhoda, and how you found that. Was that new to you, or had you thought a lot about manifesting and New Age before?
Well, my son manifested some prawn crackers in Sainsbury's the other day. So,
wow.
Yeah.
How did that go for him?
He was buzzing about it because Tesco didn't have any. So, actually, who says manifestation doesn't work? There they were on the shelf. I'm like, well, that's that resolved, isn't it?
And your son told you he was going to do it.
Yeah, he said he was going to do it. We left Tesco's. He's like, I'll manifest some in Sainsbury's. Yeah.
Wow. And there they were.
There they were. Yeah. I mean, what can you argue about that? Yeah.
Maybe we need to get him on.
We'll get him on. How old's your son?
He's 15.
Okay. So is that common? Like, is this common language with 15-year-olds? I know you've got...
Okay. Can I be completely honest here?
Yeah.
Which is going to make me look like not an expert on this issue.
Okay, yeah, go on.
I just thought it was like him making a joke. And then then I heard about Rhoda's episode. I'm like, oh, manifesting is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Manifesting's got a history. Now, I don't think he realised that. Obviously, he's just picked it up off his friends. He thought that was a fun thing to say. But what I loved about Rhoda's episode was, like, I think we use this language quite a lot of the time, and we don't realise, like, where it's coming from. We don't realise what it really means. And I think that's true of a lot of things we're going to talk about in this episode. The book I wrote was on meditation. I wrote it on biblical meditation. I'm a Christian, so I was writing from a Christian perspective. And actually, what was so good for me about writing the book was all the research I had to do. And I'm like, oh, no way. I never knew. I didn't realize this was ancient. I thought this was new. And it turns out that humans have been doing this stuff for centuries. So I think that Rhoda's episode was great, partly because she was so, like, I found her really knowledgeable about stuff. And I found it really helpful to have her open up and explore these issues, because it got my mind really thinking.
Brilliant. And to segue into this episode, how would you pull apart what we're chatting with Rhoda and what we're going to chat about with you more in terms of meditating, focusing our minds? How would you pull apart those two?
Well, I don't think it's new, but I think there's been a real resurgence. There's been a real interest in what she was talking about, which was new age spirituality. But as we begin to think about meditation, obviously there's a lot of stuff we'll talk about, like the various apps that are available, different practices that humans might have been doing for really forever, and actually just sort of realizing that they've had a real resurgence. I think that's the connection, is that there's a real interest, and I think we're going to explore together why.
Yeah, really. Absolutely. Yeah, and I think, like, maybe to start with, I mean, can you help us sort of understand why it feels like this is more of an issue at the moment? Because there is this sort of recent rise in mindfulness practices, yoga, meditation, a lot of people really thinking about and concerned with how they use their mind, how they sort of quiet their mind in certain moments, how they focus in other moments. I mean, why do you think it's having a resurgence, becoming more popular at the moment?
Oh, there's a number of reasons. So I'm going to tell you some really obvious things and you're going to go, yeah, I knew that already. But I think it's helpful to say it out loud. Like, technology has changed so quickly. So my dad used to go out to work at 8 and he'd get back at 6 and that would be the end of work. Like, he wouldn't ever consider working in the evenings or the weekends. And yet we're now always on, always connected. We can be always working. We carry around these distraction devices in our pockets, which means that we can always be doing something else. We can always be, well, the other thing I think is that we can always be in two places at once. I think what really happened with the pandemic was the increased availability of things like video conferencing. And to be fair, it feels like I can now be omnipresent. I can be in a business meeting in my bedroom wearing my pajamas whilst also doing my Tesco order. And everybody thinks I'm in one place, but I'm actually in three. And I think this multitasking isn't really helping us. Like, I think we think our computers multitask, but I don't know much about tech, but I think they're just running one process at a time. And actually, really, by asking my computer to do 7 things at once, I'm slowing everything down. And I just, to some extent, think that that's what I'm doing with my brain. I'm not really multitasking because my brain can only focus on one thing at once. I'm just asking it to do too much at once and therefore feeling in a bit of a muddle a lot of the time. And I think the other thing that I've really been thinking about is that with this massively wide availability of information, and it's at our fingertips via Google, actually what's happened with our houses, with capitalism and consumerism, where we've just got more and more stuff, I think that's happened with my mind. And I think we hear all about decluttering our houses, but actually when you say to me there's a rise in techniques and apps, I'm like, that is all about decluttering our minds, because we've also experienced what's happened in our houses, in our heads.
Graham, I want to ask you, can I share a story first? 10 years ago, I think, it was about 10 years ago, okay. We had this, I work at a big corporate, we had this amazing South American guy who was our new CEO. And in his first town hall meeting, he's like, right, guys, I want you to introduce you to this guy. And there was about 200 of us. And then this guy's like, right, we're going to meditate together now. We were like, it was a bit awkward in the room. And then it was just silence. And then he was getting us to concentrate on our breathing and all this stuff. And I think everyone just left that shell-shocked. I know that was 10 years ago, but I feel like that was my first introduction to, and he was really encouraging us to do this in the morning and just like declutter our minds and da, da, da. I was like, wow, like the fact that that's now come into corporate life and that our CEO wants us to be doing this in the morning. I was like, wow, I hadn't even thought about it.
Yeah.
Have you had any experience?
Yeah, we did actually have one. We had like an offsite. This was years ago. And we had a guy come in and do like breathing exercises with us. And it was very much to that point, it was like, how do you quiet your mind? How do you really find, you know, create a peaceful state in your mind? I'll be completely honest, I actually didn't stay for the whole thing. And do you know what was actually slightly ironic, thinking back? I had some work to do that was quite urgent. Yeah. And all I could do was think about that. I was sitting there going, just thinking, I'm not working and I have some stuff to do. And eventually I was like, I just can't do this. I have to leave. There was lots of people in there, so it wasn't very obvious. But so yeah, my experience of that didn't go terribly well, if I'm honest. But okay, that's my only like comparable thing, I would say.
So our minds have got cluttered, as proven by Graham. He couldn't even concentrate.
I couldn't get through half an hour of breathing.
He couldn't do it. Anyway, just out of interest personally, Linda, how could you share how that's affected you?
Well, I just see that kind of cluttered mind all the time in my life, particularly actually, what we were saying about the multitasking. So I'll give you an example just from yesterday. My son came home late from school, and it was about 8:30, and he was cooking his dinner. And I thought to myself, oh, I have not seen him all day. I'll sit and have dinner with him. So he makes his dinner. We sit down, and I found myself, I was on my phone and sending a really complicated email that I've been putting off all day to a work situation. And I sent it, and then I thought, what am I doing? Like, I'd even planned and had like this thought, I will spend time with my son and sit and eat with him. He is 17. He wasn't even on his phone, and I'm sat there on the sofa doing work. And I'm like, that to me summarizes everything that is wrong with my use of technology and my response to all of this stuff that I've just been diagnosing. So if I'm like diagnosing it and super aware of it and been researching it and writing about it, and I'm still doing it, I think that probably tells you that I'm probably not the only one.
Well, it's good to know that you're still sort of working on that yourself. And I mean, I guess when you think about these modern techniques, things like, you know, apps like Headspace, things like mindfulness and yoga, to what extent do you think those can be helpful? And to what extent do you think are there some dangers, risks associated with doing those things?
I think it's a great question, because you've used the word modern techniques, and it's just an interesting one, and it's helpful, because then you've gone and listed an app that's been created really recently and two ancient practices from Hinduism and Buddhism. Okay, so like, they're not even a family of therapies. They have very little in common. And I think that you've hit the nail on the head when you said they're modern techniques. So basically what we're doing is we're feeling, oh, there's this problem. My mind is really cluttered. I'm trying to multitask and I'm feeling just slightly chaotic, overwhelmed perhaps. For some of us, we feel like we've even got to the breaking point with it. And so what we're doing is we're reaching for a technique. Yeah. And there's a writer called Anne Ajay. She's written about this. And she makes the point that when you go to an app, perhaps it's an app with nature on it, perhaps you're playing yourself bird song, or you're playing yourself the sound of waves breaking, perhaps you're just looking at different things in nature. What you've actually done is you've reached out of your chaotic system to try to pull in a life hack that's going to help you to feel a bit better. It's a little bit like a sticking plaster over the problem, because what you really could do with doing, and you've expressed this by choosing a nature app, is actually going out into creation and being in creation. And the reason I think that being in creation is so helpful, and what I think is something of the root of the issue, is that when you're out there and looking at the vastness of the sky and maybe looking up in the dark and seeing the stars, maybe you're looking a big ocean, maybe you're just looking at a tree. My friend's into tree hugging. We went for a walk on London South Bank and she found a tree and hugged it. And I was like, sorry, this is embarrassing. Like, what are you doing? And she's like, I'm hugging a tree. And I'm like, okay.
I can see that.
Yeah. We won't get into tree hugging now. But the point I'm making is that actually by being in nature, you remind yourself of who you are. And I think one of the really important things is you remind yourself how insignificant you are and that the world does not revolve around you. And so the point Anne Ajay makes is that actually you're using nature as a tool in your toolbox to try to make yourself feel better. But all you've done is brought it into kind of your orbit. So it is serving you and you're at the center of the universe. And the point she makes is that actually the reason we're reaching out for these things is because we don't really want to sort out the root of the problem, which is that we're not at the center of everything. And it would help us a lot to realize that we're not.
That's so helpful.
Wow.
And really clarifying, actually, because I think I've felt that without really understanding that particular point. So when I've been away, I mean, I went... we climbed Kilimanjaro like a number of years ago, and I came back and people were saying, how do you feel? You must be exhausted. And I felt so refreshed. And all I could say was I felt small again. I didn't really know how else to explain it, but I felt that felt significant to me. And I think it was just, as you say, it was recognizing my own sort of physical insignificance and that I wasn't at the center of things. The world is so big. Everything is so big. And actually it's not revolving around me.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most important discoveries, if you can say it like that, that I made as I was researching my book, was just to realize that so much of my thinking is about myself. And it's interesting, like Jesus, when he talks about the greatest commandment, he says is love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself. And yourself is not in there. Like loving yourself is important, but you see that it's right there at the end. And actually Jesus is saying you need to get God right at the center and then yourself and others in perspective to him. And what I thought was interesting about that was that when I went to therapy on the NHS, which is the healthcare service in the UK, and one of the things they recommend to help with mental well-being is to go and volunteer in a charity. And I'm like, how interesting that even they recognize that the root of my problem is not that I need to look into myself more, but that actually I need to get out of myself and to find my place kind of in the wider creation, but also in the community. And loving God and loving others is kind of, it seems to work to the NHS. And I think it's because, well, maybe not the loving God bit, but actually they're recognizing something about we're not created to have ourselves at the center of our universe.
Mm. I've heard of hybrids, which I'm interested in your opinion on, Linda, where people will go to a retreat in Indonesia or Bali or something. And it's kind of what you're saying in terms of you're out in nature, you know, usually it's pretty beautiful, the environment you're in, and you're spending a lot of time, but then you're just kind of there with very little to do. You're just kind of there.
Is that you're just sense? There.
Does that mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, I've heard friends go away and do this for like 2 weeks, but it feels slightly different to what you're saying in terms of that could also still be you at the center of your trip in Bali versus feeling small in a big universe. Does that make sense?
I mean, I think there's a space for stripping everything away because I think often, I mean, maybe we're pushing this analogy too far, but if I want to declutter my house, I'm pretty sure that one of the techniques is to take everything. I read this in a book. I read that you should take everything out and then hold each thing and only put back what gives you positive energy. And
what
I was like,
joy.
That's the word.
Yeah.
And Mary I thought,
Kondo, very good.
It would take a very long time to take everything out of my house. And I think I'd then feel very, very despairing.
And I think you might lose some neighbours and some friends.
Yeah, probably.
I think I'd lose my mind. I don't think I could do that. But I'm just saying that I think, you know, when you're thinking about what really matters, I don't think it's wrong to strip everything out and then put back what really matters. But I think maybe we're confounding two different things, because I'm more thinking of the fact that we're living in an individualistic culture and we're defining who we are and what's important just by reference to ourselves. Whereas I think the root of the problem is more the culture, because I think we were created to live in community. I mean, as a Christian, I believe that we're created to live in community with God and others. But I think irrespective of what you think about that, we are actually created to live in community. And so much of the problem is that loss of perspective in the individualistic culture that thinks I am everything. I am at the center. I am all there is to say, and I define who I am. And I found it really liberating in my journey to recognize that I don't actually define who I am. So much of who I am is determined by the place where I am, the people who are important to me, the people I love, the people in my community who I can serve, who need me. Like I've found it quite liberating to just recognize that I'm not at the center. And I think that's slightly different to the Bali retreat, but I don't really want to comment on the rightness of going to Bali on a retreat, but I think there can be a space for stripping everything back and going, okay, this feels really scary. And actually probably it's a good thing to have to face into that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's actually been a theme across quite a few of the episodes we've done, Jack, that sense of how tempting it is to look for identity and look for control by kind of turning inwards and looking within yourself. But actually some of the challenges that emerge from that. And actually when you look outwardly and you look beyond yourself, kind of how freeing and sort of satisfying that can be. So really interesting that we're kind of getting into that.
Yeah. Really helpful. We've thought a little bit about the dangers of these modern techniques or practices, apps like Headspace. But to what extent would you say they can help, Linda?
Well, that's an interesting question. So I, in part of my research for my book, spent some time talking through meditation with somebody who's really into Buddhist meditation. And she was really passionately advocating for it. But as we talked, it became apparent that she had a sister who was really mentally unwell, and however much she encouraged and helped her sister to meditate, actually her sister was too unwell for self-help. And I think that some people find self-help techniques helpful, but the really radical and significant thing I've found about biblical meditation, about Christianity really, is that it's not about what I can do to make myself feel better, but actually biblical meditation is just filling my mind with what God has already done. I think of it a little bit like looking at a photo book. It's not a photo book that's filled with me. It's a photo book that's filled with what God has done. And actually that is what really helped and changed my story. That's how it really helped me to see not what I could do to make myself better, but to remind myself who God said that I was.
That's so good. And actually very relevant to what one of the things that Rhoda said, which I thought was one of the most powerful things she said, the sort of do versus done.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And just that is profoundly different. Completely transforms everything, that do versus done.
Yeah, yeah.
And that moment might be different for everyone. Like, thanks for sharing your example of your Buddhist friend and her sister. But for Rhoda, for example, yeah, you know, having a child and a really traumatic birth and feeling, do you know what, I don't have this. I'm out of control. I can't help myself. Or I'm so in debt. I can't help myself. This is beyond me. I don't wish that on anyone, those moments. But they are moments of realization. And you can't say to someone, oh, in that moment, oh, come on, just pull your socks up.
Yeah.
I think that's cruel at that moment.
Absolutely. Just be positive. Yeah. No, I mean, totally. I think that's really, really hard, isn't it? But
right.
Yeah. I think to sort of, Linda, you sort of mentioned earlier that you have done meditation as well. I mean, how did you get into meditating? What does that look like for you?
Yeah. So, it was when I had postnatal depression. It's so interesting, so similar to Rhoda's story in so many respects. It was a really difficult time for me. It was when my third son was born 15 years ago. And I actually went to therapy and I became aware of how negative the soundtrack in my mind was, really. And I would look in the mirror and I would think, you know, I wasn't making positive affirmations of myself. I would basically say to the reflection in the mirror, guilty, worthless and useless. That was just the repeated refrain going around in my head. I felt like I was a rubbish mum, I was a rubbish friend, I was a rubbish Christian, a rubbish wife. And actually what happened was I was one day actually literally looking in the bathroom mirror. It was so weird listening to Rhoda's podcast. I was like, yeah, I did that too. Yeah, I was saying these negative things over myself. And I realized I was humming a children's song that we'd been doing at church. And the words were from John 3:17. God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. And I realized that I was thinking, oh, guilty, worthless, useless. And that became what I thought God thought of me. And engaging with the words of that song, he didn't send his son to condemn. God doesn't speak those words over me. He sent his son to save me. And wow, it was like so profound, that moment, because I realized that in answer to the question, guilty, God was saying to me, you can be forgiven. In answer to those thoughts that I was worthless and useless, God said to me, no, I sent my son to make you my dearly loved child. And so my experience of meditation was not me speaking positive words into the mirror. Actually, God broke into my thoughts through his word. And in this case, in the words of a song, ironically, a children's song, such simple truth. And he profoundly changed the way that I was thinking. And I think for me, that is what biblical meditation is. It's allowing God to speak his truth to us and tell us who we are, tell us who we really are, tell us who we can be if we're trusting him, and to help us to find our place in the universe that he's made, to help us realize we were never supposed to be the center of everything. He's the center, but that is the best place to be, is allowing him to be the center and telling me who I am in him. And so for me, it was a profoundly amazing experience. But the best thing was that I didn't actually get asked to write about it until 10 years later. So I had time to kind of recover from the crazy, crazy mess that my life was. I know some people write books right in the thick of it when they're really suffering. And I'm just so grateful that I actually had a chance to get through it and to recover somewhat from that depression before I actually wrote about it.
Can I ask, as a follow-up, Linda, because I suppose probably a lot of people have tried meditation or have done, you know, maybe a yoga class where there's an element of
mindfulness and quiet time in that. I can't imagine there's many people who have tried sort of Christian meditation, as you put it. I mean, what does that look like when you do it? I mean, if you were to sort of take us through like what you're thinking about when you're doing, when you're meditating in a Christian way, just curious if you could sort of explain what that looks like in practice.
I totally can. And what I think is different about Christianity is that it is not about a technique that I do. And so, interestingly, meditation is right there at the start of the Bible, which actually predates any Buddhist or Hindu meditation. I personally feel like meditating was God's idea. Okay. And we find out that Isaac goes out into the fields and he meditates. He literally is looking up at the stars and reminding himself who God is. And so I don't know that it's a great analogy, but I do think it's a little bit like a photo book. It's just reminding ourselves who God is, what he's done. And the clearest way that we can do that is by engaging with his word. And when the Bible goes on to use the word meditate, it's kind of using it in the sense of chewing something. And I think that's really interesting because I think so much of the time we're skimming, we're superficially, even with the Bible, like often as a Christian, I'm just skimming it. I'm superficially reading it. And to meditate on it is simply to chew on it and to get the meaning out of it. And I just think it is like that photo book saying, oh, this is who I am. And so when I'm reading God's word and I'm chewing on it and I'm really thinking about what it means, usually I just end up going, wow, I'm forgiven. I'm not guilty. Wow, I'm a dearly loved child. I'm not worthless. It's so simple. And so I don't want to give you like a list of techniques or a 5 ways to meditate on the Bible. Just chew on what it says. Read it deeply. Think about what it means. Actually, one of the role models who really helped me in this journey was a Christian who he wrote the hymn, It Is Well With My Soul. He wrote the words, when peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like storm billows roll, whatever my lot, you have taught me to say, it is well with my soul. And the reason that was a really important song to me, because when I was struggling with depression, I was actually even struggling to read God's word. And so sometimes I would just sing that song to myself. And it was really precious to me because he wrote that after he'd lost his 4 daughters in a shipwreck at sea, and he'd actually lost his business in the Great Fire of Chicago. And yet he could write, whatever my lot, you've taught me to say, it is well with my soul. And it was really encouraging to me because I just, you know, my life was really crazy at the time. I had 3 small boys. Everything felt like it was falling apart. And for me, meditation, just reminding myself that whatever my lot, it is well with my soul. Like God's got me in this. It's not that I've got this. It's not that I've got me. But actually, God's got me. He says I'm a dearly loved child. Actually, I found that deep connection with history really, really precious to me, to think I'm not the first person. It's true about Wilberforce as well. He loved meditating on the Bible. He walked through Hyde Park meditating. And I think when you think about his story of helping with the abolition of the slave trade, it was a really, really long journey. It took his entire life to campaign, not just to get the act passed, but also to get to the point where the slaves were actually freed. And that happened just around the time of his death. How did he keep going? And I think part of the secret to that is because he was just chewing on who God was, and he knew what God was calling him to. And I think that it's interesting because what I'm actually finding is that the history, the kind of tracing things back to ancient roots and saying, this is who I am, not just like in my context, in my geographical context, in my world, in terms of who God is, but actually who we are as humans, finding our place in human history is important. And so I think, you know, it is important to say that ancient things can be really good things. And a lot of the problems that we're finding is because the world has just gone so quickly, so advanced in technology. And we've maybe slightly lost sight of, as human beings, we need to go for walks out in the countryside. That's okay. We need to spend time with one another, actually eating dinner together, not messing around with our phones. And that's what humans have always done. And so I think, really, I want to encourage people to just recover something of our humanity.
Boom.
Yeah, so good.
So if we see Linda or Graham hugging a tree on the South Bank.
Yeah, don't be surprised.
Don't be surprised.
Just sing to them, it is well with his soul.
Yeah, I was thinking, Graham,
I'll probably be chanting that at the time.
Do you want to sing that song for us? No. Not
well, I wouldn't have the line. I wouldn't have the words, to be honest with you.
We'll play it. We'll play it at the end of the episode.
Play it in the outro.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll play it at the outro.
Sarah can add that in for us.
Okay, perfect. So super helpful. The things that have stuck out for me, just as I'm absorbing this, just that helpful thing that Linda said, that was like, is not an app that you can quickly download that is a bit like a sticky plaster, but really you're still at the center of everything and it's not really helping you step back and consider, one, you're not at the center of the universe, and then two, like the photo book, just enjoy truth that exists about yourself, not that you're just saying to yourself in your own mind, but that God is saying to you, and that can help us.
Well, I think that's a really good summary, actually, Jacko.
Perfect. That's a wrap.
Fantastic.
Okay, we'll tune in for next time. We're speaking to Annette, and we're going to be doing some yoga.
Yeah, so we're actually going to do yoga before. Like, are we going to record that bit? How's that going to work, Jack? I'm excited to see how that all works.
Okay.
You might hear some like weird yoga noises at the beginning of the, of
Jack
the episode.
Just run okay,
fantastic. Thanks so much, Linda. It's been great talking to
such
you.
A pleasure.
I would love to get a bit of a plug for your book.
Oh yeah, we should definitely do that.
Can we plug that now?
Sure. So the book's called Deeper Still.
Deeper Still.
And it's available from everywhere. All good bookstores. It's published by Good Book Company.
Brilliant. Deeper Amazing. Still. Linda Alcott.
Get a copy. Fantastic. Thanks, Linda.
Thanks for listening in.
When peace like a river attends